Welcome to another episode of PMCA Research Chat. On this episode of Cannabis and Confections and Snacks series, we will be discussing cannabis as an ingredient and the future of hyper-focused cannabis products. With me today is Carolina Vasquez Mitchell. Carolina is Chief Scientific Officer for Scientia Labs and the creator of Dremt and Lucador. Previously, she was the lab director for a cannabis testing facility. Prior to that, Carolina was the Chief Scientific Officer for Cushy Punch, where she oversaw the development, improvement, and overall compliance of all products and ensured that the company continued to lead the market in product innovation while upholding the highest standards of compliance and food safety. Before Cushy Punch, Carolina was Head of Research for Power Brands, America's leading beverage consultancy firm. During her tenure, she led more than 10 projects for a broad spectrum of companies, nurtured a concept to commercialization for Taco Bell, and developed products for Pepsi, Quaker, and Gatorade. Before that, she founded the consultancy firm KitKemp to support companies in the formulation and process development of cannabis edibles, supplements, foods, and beverages, assisting a variety of cannabis companies with their product formulation, quality control, testing, and manufacturing processes. She is also a founding chair of the Legalization of Cannabis and Hemp Edibles Division of the Institute of Food Technologists. To date, she has developed more than 100 cannabis products. A gifted academic with deep experience in the developing regulatory standards of the cannabis industry, Carolina's areas of specialty include organic chemistry, biochemistry research, laboratory testing and operations, good manufacturing processes, good laboratory practices, quality assurance, and R&D for cannabis products, pharmaceuticals, foods, and beverages. She has more than 20 years of experience with organic synthesis and extractions and has extracted DNA, RNA, proteins, terpenes, and other pharmacologically active molecules. Originally from Guadalajara, Mexico, Carolina received her BS in chemistry, pharmacobiology, and a degree in industrial chemistry from the University of Guadalajara. After completing the chemistry PhD classwork at the University of Southern California, Carolina decided to start her consultancy firm and left the PhD program early with a master's degree in chemistry. During her tenure researching at USC, Carolina published in 3 consecutive years and managed projects funded by the National Science Foundation, obtained awards for over $1 million, trained laboratory instructors, and taught organic chemistry, biochemistry, and neurosciences. Carolina has been featured in Forbes, MG, Golden State, Rolling Stone, Entrepreneur, and on Cheddar TV, and other publications and news sources. She has also been featured in Dope Magazine, where she was named one of the outstanding women in cannabis for 2018. On today's episode, we will be talking about different approaches to formulate hyper-focused products. Various cannabis plants produce cannabinoids, terpenes, and flavonoids, also known as canaflavins, in different proportions. Each of these molecules has particular pharmacological effects, health benefits, and side effects. If used in the correct ratio, with the proper matrix or pharmaceutical formulation, and in combination with other natural products, these cannabis-derived compounds can create hyper-focused edibles to target specific health concerns. Thank you, Carolyn, for joining us today. Have I missed anything, or is there anything you'd like to add before we dive in?
Hello. just one thing is called Luchador, the name of the brand.
Gotcha.
Luchador, it comes from Lucha Libre. It's a word in Spanish, which I wasn't expecting you to get right anyway. So from my origins and my background, I'm from Guadalajara, Mexico. Also, the name of my company, Ciencia Labs, really means just science labs in Spanish. So Ciencia is just science. So we use a combination of different Spanish words, and we have a lot of people that mispronounce the word, so don't worry. This description was before I started my third brand, which is Quell, and it's a brand for anxiety. So by now we have 3 brands. That's Dremt for sleep, Luchador for recreational purposes, and Quell for anxiety.
So considering your wealth of experience, can you speak to cannabis myths and science facts?
Well, yes. First, cannabis is no a magic remedy. It's no panacea that will cure absolutely every disease you have. It won't help you with losing weight. For example, there are some companies that try to use cannabis for every purposes, from regulating your hormones or for fertility purposes or for losing weight and for cancer. And that's just a hype. So I, even though I'm in the cannabis industry and I want my products to be sold and I want my products to be popular and I want people to be happy using my products, I'm not going to tell people that they will work for everything. And a lot of companies also don't really use evidence. They don't do their research. They just use anecdotes from other people that claim that it helped with some specific health issues. But there is also some of the companies said that there is not enough research in cannabis. However, there is at least 60 years of research on cannabis, and there are thousands and may, I don't know, dozens of thousands of studies on cannabis, studying the effect of cannabinoids in almost every single issue. So that's why I feel very confident to say that cannabis cannot help you with everything. It can help you with some issues such as anxiety, pain relief, sleep disorders. It can help you with that, but it doesn't help for everything. And also, not all cannabinoids will have the same effects, right? So we have over 100 cannabinoids in the cannabis plant, and each cannabinoid, the most common are tetrahydrocannabinol of THC and cannabidiol or CBD. Those most common cannabinoids have extremely different effects. They won't help you for the same purposes. They interact with different receptors. And well, the misinformation, myths, and hype in the industry make people believe that this cannabinoids can help for the same, that THC and CBD, the only difference between the two is that one will get you high and the other one doesn't, but they have the same effects. And that's absolutely not true. So what I can say so far about the myths versus science and facts in the cannabis industry.
Okay, so when you talk about hyper-focused, I'm assuming you're getting into a particular directed target of whatever your particular formulation is.
Yes. So as mentioned, we have over 100 cannabinoids in the cannabis plant. And the cannabinoids that have been more studied are THC, CBD, CBG, CBN. And these four cannabinoids have very different effects. And you can use in formulations, you can use a single cannabinoid or a combination of two or more cannabinoids to target a specific effect. So when I talk about creating hyper focus, it's pretty much making a mixture or a specific molecular blends that target a specific health condition or will have a specific pharmacological effect. And I'm using compounds that are derived from cannabis or are derived from other plants. Or I also combine things like vitamins or minerals to have a specific effect. And all of this molecules have clinical trials and research and data that supports the use of these compounds. And we can use in a combination, craft a product using cannabinoids and other extracts from other plants to target a specific effects, such as improve sleep, reduce anxiety, and relieve pain.
Can you get into more detail on cannabis pharmacobiology, maybe in general, or how it relates to some of the work that you do? I'm thinking in terms of, like, you know, when you go through your presentation, you've got toxicology, you've got pharmacodynamics, pharmacy.
Well, it doesn't matter if you talk about cannabis or any other drug. Pharmacokinetics, pharmacodynamics, toxicology is the same, right? So pharmacology, when people ask me about my background, I said I'm a pharmacologist, and they think I'm a pharmacist. Like, I'm a person that will be in a CVS giving you, giving you the prescription, and that's not it. Yeah, of course, I have some knowledge into not prescribe, but how to provide the prescription and give advice on how to take the drugs. But pharmacology study five different branches. We have more, but the five main different branches for pharmacology is pharmacokinetics, pharmacodynamics, toxicology, pharmacy, and pharmacognosia. And pharmacy is actually part of pharmacology. pharmacy is just how to make the drugs consumable. So the pharmacy science is like, how am I going to make a very effective pharmaceutical formulation where I can use, for example, cannabinoids? And if my purpose or my goal is to make the effect faster, I'm going to create a nanoemulsion of these cannabinoids and put it in a liquid or in a tablet. And the goal is that when people take it, it's going to have the effect of the cannabinoid in 5 to 10 minutes. So that's what pharmacy does, like the technology that I'm going to use. And all these branches are correlated, right? Like they interact with each other and you have to study all of them to really develop a product that will be effective. But in pharmacy, you kind of put other ingredients and make a very effective product. Pharmacokinetics, which is a part of pharmacology that study everything that is related with drugs, how they interact with your body, how you synthesize them, where do you get them from, how to put them in the right form, and also the side effects of the drugs. So pharmacokinetics, in this branch, you study what the drug does to the body. So, and in this case, talking about cannabinoids, once you consume THC and specifically delta 9 THC, the drug is going to interact with receptors, with the endocannabinoid receptor. THC will bind directly to the CB1 receptor, and it will have a series of different effects, right? It will affect your appetite, it will your blood pressure, your sleep cycle. It affects many, many aspects of your health, and it depends on the concentration that you use, right? So that's pharmacokinetics. Now, pharmacodynamics is what the body does to the drug. In this case, talking again about delta 9 THC, for purposes of this podcast, I'm going to talk about this oral consumption. Once you take THC orally, and if you're taking a normal edible, right? We're not talking about nanoemulsified and fast-acting, just a normal edible. The cannabinoid is liposoluble or soluble in fat. You will eat it. Now, in order for your, and that happened with any fat, like once you consume a fat, including a drug that is fat soluble, your stomach will digest it and it will make it hydrosoluble or absorbable. So it will make kind of an emulsion. It will combine it with acids, with salts, and it will make this compound, either a drug or any fat, being able to be absorbed. And once it's absorbed, it will go through the liver metabolism, just because it's a fat, a drug that is soluble in fat, and many other drugs also go through the liver metabolism. So your liver will metabolize, an enzyme will change the chemistry of that molecule. In the example of tetrahydrocannabinol or THC, it will change it for a delta 9 THC into 11-hydroxy THC. This molecule is able to like go from your blood into your brain much faster than delta 9 THC. So it has different chemical and physical properties than the delta 9 THC has. It will go into your brain, and you finally are going to have an effect. So that's pharmacodynamics.
Does effective time from the time you take said edible to the time it takes effect on the human body, is that dependent on different factors? Or, you know, like how long is it going to take to, if I'm taking something for sleep and I take it, is that dependent on the dosage of THC or effectives that are also included in that mix? Or is it pretty much a cut and dry and it takes this amount of time?
No, there's many, many factors that would affect it.
Okay.
So your metabolism, if you're a person that metabolizes things very fast, your body weight, if you're a man or a woman, if you ate a lot of fats before you, or like with your edible, if you ate a lot of fats, that's also going to modify the metabolism, the digestion of the edible, and it will modify the time where it gets an effect. So some studies have shown that a person that takes an edible for the first time will feel the effects later than a person that is used to taking cannabis, because there's a synthesization of your receptors when you take cannabis very regularly. So a person that takes cannabis very regularly will feel the effects of cannabis faster as well. That's why we have these technologies where we create nano-soluble and fast-acting drugs, because a lot of people don't like how unreliable the timing, feeling the effect of a cannabinoid in a normal edible takes. I mean, but by using other compounds, like you mentioned, for example, one of my formulations, the gummies, which I use a combination of THC, CBD, and valerian root, and other L-theanine and GABA, other compounds that can help you sleep. We nail it down to a time of like 30 minutes to 45 minutes to take an effect, because we make an emulsion in the gummy and we nail it down to about 30 to 45 minutes. So you can play around a little bit by making emulsions, facilitating and shorten the time that your body is going to absorb or feel the effect of the THC. And I have another formulation which we don't make an emulsion. We just make a normal edible. In that formulation, the effects are felt after 45 minutes or an hour.
It's very interesting, the variety and how you formulate it to the time.
Mm. So toxicology branch of pharmacology, as the word says, self-explanatory, it study the toxic effects of drugs, right? And in pharmacology, we have a saying that everything is a toxin. Everything can have side effects. All depends on the dosage, the amount of time that you are exposed to the toxin, and the form of administration. For example, in the cannabis industry, we use a lot of terpenes, right? If you work in the cannabis industry, you must know about terpenes. And if you read an SDS of limonene, for example, which is like the specification sheet or a safety sheet for the limonene, which is one of the terpenes that are extremely common in cannabis. If you read the specifications, if you see the hazards of the terpene, it literally says that it can cause death. So we are using limonene in many formulations, including edibles, inhalables. But if you're exposed in a very high concentration, like if you put yourself in a close room with the terpene, if you start boiling the terpene and you're exposed to the terpene for a very long time in a very high concentration, it can kill you.
Right.
But if you take it in a very small dose on an edible, or if you inhale it in a very small dose for a very short time, it will just relax you. So it all depends on the dosage, time that you are exposed to the toxin, and the method of administration. Some drugs will do nothing if you take it orally, but if you put it in your eye, you might get blind, or if some compounds, you can put it in your skin topically and will do nothing, but if you eat it, it will kill you. So it all depends, and also the dosage. You can drink a coffee, but if you take 1,000 milligrams of caffeine, that can kill you as well. Which it can yes. happen. It has happened with kids drinking any energy drink. I don't remember which, but
was there it Four Loko, Four Loko, or something like that.
I don't remember, but it was like an energy drink.
Yeah,
right. I'm yep. not.
They drank way too much, and it just yes. was too much caffeine.
Yeah, so you get exposed, and also you took it for a very like in a lapse of 4 hours. You took a very high amount of caffeine that will kill you. So the toxicology study the effects of drugs, but of course we consider those three factors: the method of administration, the dosage, and the time of exposure. However, with cannabinoids, and every side effect will be a toxic effect, right? Like when you say, oh, I'm intoxicated with cannabis, is because probably you took a very high amount in a very short time, and we haven't had any death reported for taking THC, but that doesn't mean that you are not going to have a very bad time with
cannabis, right? Yes. Yeah.
So that's what we do in toxicology. And finally, we have another branch, pharmacognosy or pharmacognosia. And in this one, we study the origin of the drug. Before, well, we were not very advanced in organic chemistry, so we didn't synthesize compounds like 100 years ago, we study mainly plants or microorganisms such as fungi, like when we discover penicillin, or very many drugs have been discovered from like trees and plants. Right. Now we can synthesize them, but we still apply pharmacognosia just to know the origin and also how we can, we use organic chemistry to extract them, purify them, isolate them, and also synthesize them or change them. We can change the effect of a drug by modifying their chemical structure. But to do that, we need to know where the drug comes from and how to isolate it from the source.
What's your process for isolating those drugs in your particular facility?
Well, I don't do that. We don't do that in my facility, but big extraction facilities will obtain the flower, the cannabis flower. They first will make an extraction. The most efficient method of extraction is with a solvent, usually butane or propane. And that's like, I know people are kind of like against using solvents, and maybe
I was going to go there next, because we get that with, I think it was hexane extraction of lecithin for chocolate. People were asking about impeller process and things like that.
Yeah, which usually you have to have a closed system where you recycle all your solvents. So you don't really release the solvent into the atmosphere. You have to have a process where you use a closed system, you recycle your solvents. And now once you extract the THC, for example, of the plant with the solvent, you are going to get rid of the solvent, collect the solvent back so you can recycle and do another extraction with that solvent so you don't lose it. Maybe there is a little bit of, you lose a little bit of solvent, right?
But it's like distillation.
I mean, everything is kind of like, distillation is kind of like a separation by using different boiling points. So everything is kind of like a extraction using different boiling points. So
right.
Once you extract it, because in the extraction is just, we usually do it in very cold temperatures. And then we don't lose any solvent. Once we recover all that extract, then we go into the distillation, where we use different boiling points to separate the THC out of the other solvents. And you run that extraction many times in your distillation equipment until you have a compound that is 99 or even 100% cannabinoids, and you get rid of everything else that is not a cannabinoid. You get rid of terpenes, you get rid of solvents, you get rid of everything until you have a 99% cannabinoid content in your distillate. And then we test it, of course. We test it in a laboratory where we make sure that we don't have any solvents, any pesticides, and we have very clean, almost 99% cannabinoid content in our extract. And that's what I use in our edibles.
You know, I would say that's an interesting and critical point right there to a lot of people. At least, I don't know how it is in cannabis, but in confections, people were to say, look, we have done an assay and there's no remaining extraction agent in whatever it is we're claiming. But it seems like you guys have that nailed down really well.
Well, the regulation makes you do that.
Yeah.
So when I hear people like, oh, this extract is solventless, and I'm like, well, pretty much any extract must be solventless.
Because yeah,
the regulation doesn't allow you to have any solvent in your extract or any chemicals in your extract. And also, so people are so worried about the solvents, but terpenes are solvents as well. So the structure of a terpene is very similar to a solvent. We use limonene and other terpenes in detergents and in oils to clean wood. Terpenes have been used in cleaning products for a very long time. We use them because they're wonderful solvents.
Anybody who's familiar with flavors and scents, we use them there too.
Oh, yeah. Any plant has terpenes. And when people ask me, but what is a terpene? And I say, okay, have you ever used essential oils? Yes. Okay. Yes. Well, that's pretty much it.
Exactly.
Essential oils is just a combination. It may be have like some percentage of some fats, some oils, but it's mainly just a combination of terpenes. So that's pretty much what you do. And when people is like, oh, no, but the terpenes, blah, 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 I don't like them, or it's dangerous, but you are literally inhaling terpenes when you are using a candle. Every time you light a candle, aromatic candle, or use a diffuser with aromatic oils, when you use a lotion, when you use a perfume, you are inhaling terpenes all day.
Yep. If you want to talk about molecules, receptors, and effects, we can get into endocannabinoids and phytocannabinoids.
Sure.
Maybe start with the difference between the endo and the phyto.
Well, by definition, endo means inside, right? Or from within. I want to make this very clear. We do make cannabinoids in our body. We make cannabinoids, we have cannabinoids, and we have receptors for cannabinoids in our body. And those cannabinoids that we create ourselves, since we were born, we have been creating cannabinoids in our body. And that's why we have an endocannabinoid system and we have receptors for cannabinoids. However, the cannabinoids that we create are slightly different than the endocannabinoid, but the receptors can match or can accept either endocannabinoid, which is the one that we create in our body, or they can also accept phytocannabinoid or external cannabinoid that comes from a plant. And we call them phyto just because phyto means plants. But that's something that a lot of people are unaware of, that we do have cannabinoids in our system, and that's why we have receptors for them. And these receptors can either bind with our endocannabinoids or with an external cannabinoid that comes from plants, specifically from the cannabis plant. So that's the definition of the endocannabinoid and phytocannabinoids. And the endocannabinoid system, we pretty much study the effects of cannabinoids when they bind to the cannabinoid receptor. So we have mainly two receptors, and we call it just cannabinoid receptor 1 and cannabinoid receptor 2. But we have other ones, however, they are less studied, so I'm just going to focus in the two that we have studied the most, which is CB1 and CB2. These two receptors either bind to a molecule called anandamide. This molecule binds perfectly to the CB1 receptor. And THC, specifically delta-9 THC, is a perfect match. It's an analog. We call it analog because it has a part of its molecule is very similar to our endocannabinoid, the anandamide. They pretty much match. And when they connect to the receptor, it's kind of like we call it a lock and key interaction, where the key is, in this case, the cannabinoid, and the lock is the receptor. So once this molecule, the cannabinoid, which is the key, interact with the receptor, which is the lock, it pretty much opened the lock and initiate a lot of other reactions. In this case, when THC interact with the CB1 receptor, it will have start a chain of reactions. It will affect your heart rate, blood pressure. It will interact with, of course, the CB1 receptor is very prominent in your brain. I think it's the second most abundant receptor in your brain. And that's why the THC makes you high, right? Because you have a bunch of CB1 receptors in your brain, they interact with your brain, and they have high doses, they will have a very strong effect in your brain from depression. And I'm not talking about like somatic depression, no, like you are going to get sad. I mean, like respiratory depression.
Would I be jumping to a conclusion if I were to say our brains were almost engineered to have an interaction with something, whether it's THC or something else, due to the abundance of receptors?
Yeah, of course. Like our brain is full of receptors. And that's why I studied chemistry, because for me, everything is chemistry, like everything, including a memory, a feeling. Everything is just a bunch of compounds interacting with different receptors in your brain. When you feel something, when you feel attraction for someone, or when you feel angry, or when you feel love, all of that is just a series of molecules that interact with different receptors, and it will produce an effect in your body, including THC.
And then using the interaction of these cannabinoids with the particular receptors, you can then engineer whatever you're looking, whether it's sleep or pain or anxiety, that's what you engineer for those.
Yeah. So for example, THC interact with your CB1 receptor. CB1 receptor is mainly in your brain, but it's also in your stomach. So that's why it can increase appetite, or it can actually induce vomit, right? When you take it in very high doses, you start to have nausea. But you have a lot of receptors, CB1 receptors in your brain, in your stomach, and in your reproductive system. So mostly on your brain. So when you take THC, it will affect your brain, your digestive system, and in less degree, the reproductive system. Now we have another receptor, the CB1 receptor. And for that one, we have an endocannabinoid system. It's a complicated name, so we're just going to call it 2AG, but it's an arachidonic acid. It's a complicated word. It's a very long word, so we just call it AG. So the AG binds to the CB2 receptor and it had different effects because the CB2 receptor, it is in your brain, but not as much as the CB1. You have very few of these receptors in your brain, but you have a lot of these receptors in your immune system and in your skin and in your peripheral nerves. So the CBD, so now THC is very prominent in plants and it binds to the CB1 receptor and is going to have effects on your brain and your stomach. Now, CBD, some people assume, okay, well, CBD then might bind to the CB2 receptor, but that's not the case. Actually, CBD is not a perfect match for any of our endocannabinoid receptors. What CBD does is interacts with the receptor allosteric way. We call that is like it modified the interaction of the THC to the receptor.
It's like a facilitator.
It's a modifier. Gotcha. And because it doesn't bind perfectly. The CBD is not a key. However, it still interacts with the receptors. And even with the absence of THC, it can still... since we have endocannabinoids, natural cannabinoids, so and we take CBD, which modifies the interaction of our own endocannabinoids into our receptors, that's why you still have an effect from CBD. And you can have an effect in the CB1 receptor and the CB2 receptor. You can have effect in the cardiovascular system and inflammatory, like you can reduce inflammation with CBD. You can reduce anxiety with CBD and other many effects, right? It's not magic, but it does have a lot of effects in our body because it interacts with our receptors and modifies the interaction of our endocannabinoids with the receptors. So even though you are not taking THC, you are still modifying the interaction of our own cannabinoids. And that's why it has many, many effects. Now we have one cannabinoid, but that it actually binds perfectly to the CB2 receptor, and that's CBN. And right now that cannabinoid has been popular for about 2 years or 1 year. This cannabinoid binds to the CB2 receptor. It doesn't bind to the CB1 receptor, and that's why it's no actually, it doesn't induce sleep. Like there's a big hype in the industry where people believe, and industries and even companies are just created around CBN with the belief that CBN helps for sleep, but it doesn't. It doesn't interact with the CB1 receptor, which is the only cannabinoid receptor that actually participates in the sleep cycle. The CB2 receptor doesn't participate in the sleep cycle, and that's the receptor that the CBN binds to. So that's a perfect interaction. And the CB2 receptor, even though it doesn't participate in the sleep cycle, but it is very prominent in the immune system. So there is some speculation that the CBN actually might help with the immune system, which is a great discovery. It's a breakthrough. There's still not a lot of research on CBN and immune system, but I'm excited about some future research on it. However, very clear, CBN doesn't work for sleep.
So what kind of new research are you talking about? What new avenues are we opening up when we go down that road?
So there's still not a lot of research on the interaction of CBN with the receptor 2, unfortunately, but there is speculation it will have an effect in the immune system. So I'm excited about that. Knew that from like 10 years ago, that CBG, we call it the mother cannabinoid. The CBG cannabinoid is the cannabinoid that gives origin to all the other cannabinoids, right? So you can, and that's what a lot of people are doing right now. They take the immature plant. CBG is created before you create THC or CBD or any other cannabinoid in the plant produces CBG. So they take immature plants with a lot of CBG. They purify the CBG, and then they modify the structure to create any cannabinoid they want. From CBN, CBD, THC, any cannabinoid can be produced. I'm not saying it's easy, but they can produce any cannabinoid from the CBG. Now, wow. CBG wasn't very interesting for researchers, but lately they have been doing research on CBG. And very interesting about the CBG, and that's something that I've used for one of my formulations, is that it has been used specifically for panic attacks.
Anxiety-related type things.
Yeah, anxiety-related disorder. Yeah, anxiety-related disorder or something like that. So it has been used for anxiety and have been used for panic attacks. So that's a very interesting molecule as well. And in combination with CBD, can do great things for your anxiety, depression, and panic attacks. So that's also research I have seen lately. However, I haven't seen a lot of data. The only four cannabinoids that I have seen enough data to really talk about them are THC, CBD, CBN, and CBG.
Okay. I'm going to pivot a little bit as we get to the end here. I'm curious about your perceptions on marketing. What's more popular? Is it the hyper-focused stuff for, say, anxiety, sleep, that kind of thing, or just for recreation?
Most popular SKU, a single SKU, the most popular is our sleep gummy. That's our most popular SKU. But data based on brands like Luchador brand, which is a recreational brand, sells a lot. However, if we look at single SKUs, or most popular and our best, the sleep gummy. And in general, I think sleep gummies are one of the best sellers in every store. People really look for an alternative to heavy drugs. Free sleep, right? From Xanax. Right. They're looking for alternative products that can use for sleep. Because now, I take a melatonin gummy and it doesn't do anything for me. I take melatonin or other compounds, it doesn't. However, cannabis, and so I started even my company, that brand, because I do have a lot of problems. Well, I don't have anymore, but I used to have a lot of problems to fall asleep, and I use cannabis to solve that issue. So,
okay, so since you opened that can of worms, so smoking versus eating a gummy, is there any research showing? I know people who will smoke cannabis to fall asleep. And I'm just curious how that would compare to taking a directed hyper-focused product. Is there any scientific evidence showing that, say, the Drenth brand will be more consistent and more effective than, I don't know, smoking a joint before you go to bed?
So when I created those products specifically for sleep, I use the same scientific method that I used to use when I was in the PhD program, right? I look at the data, I look at scientific papers, any research that is out there that talks about sleep. I study sleep and I make hypotheses. So when I study the effects of cannabinoids for sleep, I discover some pros and cons of using THC and CBD for sleep. So THC is wonderful for your deep, but we have five different phases of sleep. We have phase 1, 2, 3, 4, which are the non-REM sleep. Mm-hmm. And then we have the fifth phase, which is the REM sleep. Now, the THC the THC will promote deep sleep, which is the third and fourth phase of sleep. And why is because it increases the delta waves in your brain. And delta waves are very prominent in the deep sleep. So if you give THC to a person and then we analyze the brain waves, you will see an increment in the delta waves. Now, CBD increases alpha waves in your brain. And the alpha waves are present in the first phase of sleep, which is just a relaxation state. right? So I discovered, okay, so if I use CBD in combination with THC, I will induce relaxation by increasing the alpha waves in your brain. And then I will make the person fall asleep because it will increase the delta waves, which are present in the third and fourth phase of sleep. However, THC and CBD and a combination of both, they can reduce REM sleep, which is the rapid eye movement sleep. And that sleep phase, even though it's active, once you see, if you see what happened in your brain, it's an active phase, but this phase is essential for your brain to any essential...
Like recovery.
It's a recovery. It's where your brain start to create new synapses, new learning experiences, your short-term memory goes into the long-term memory. So if you don't have a ride, if you don't have enough REM sleep, you start being kind of forgetful, right? And kind of like if you call a person a pothead and they forget a lot of things, it's because they actually are lacking a lot of REM sleep.
Gotcha.
So that's what I saw. I was like, okay, so I want to create a product, like with my pharmacology background, I wanted to create a product that will help you with all the phases of sleep. And that's why I use THC, CBD, but I use molecules that specifically increase REM sleep. And those are valerian root, GABA, and L-theanine. We also use melatonin, but not in our edibles. We use it in our tinctures. And melatonin also increases REM sleep. But valerian root, L-theanine, and GABA specifically target REM sleep. So that's why when I said hyper-focused product using cannabis and natural ingredients, because I'm using cannabinoids to improve some phases of the sleep, but I'm adding other molecules like melatonin, L-theanine, GABA, and valerian root to directly improve the REM sleep, which is the phase that is missing when you are taking cannabis. So any product in the market that only uses THC and CBD will be good for your deep sleep and for relaxation, but it will affect negatively your REM sleep.
It won't promote it, right.
I always recommend DREMT.
Okay. Is there anything else you want to hit on here?
The anxiety part and the pain part, I can maybe go very quick on it.
Okay.
I designed a product that uses cannabis and other compounds to help you sleep better than using only cannabinoids. And the same I did for anxiety. So I study anxiety. Anxiety is more complicated than sleep, right? Because you can get anxious for many, many things. So it's different. But studying anxiety, I've observed how CBD and THC can be used to improve or reduce the anxiety. And different studies show how CBD improves alpha waves. Alpha waves are present in relaxation states. CBG, as I mentioned before, have been used for anxiety disorders and panic attacks. And THC in very low doses can also help for anxiety. So that's what I did with this product. However, I also use other compounds and other extracts, chamomile, lavender, lemon balm, GABA, and L-theanine. All of those compounds and plant extracts also help you with anxiety. And I make a combination. It depends on which version you use. The gummy uses a variation of these different molecules, and the tincture uses another variation. But we're trying to target all aspects that can affect the anxiety. And when you look at the, in my presentation, I mentioned the GABA receptor. And if you mm-hmm. look at the GABA receptor, you have like many sites. You can open up the receptor or induce a reaction in the receptor if you stimulate different sites of the receptors. And that's why for anxiety purposes, you use barbiturates, you use benzodiazepines, you can even use alcohol. So you can use all these three drugs to induce a sedation effect or anxiety. But you also can stimulate the GABA receptor by using directly GABA or other molecules that I'm using in my formulation for anxiety. Right. So I use kind of the same scientific method that I use for my sleep formulations for the anxiety purposes. And finally, for pain, well, we know that cannabis can help for pain, but on this, I wanted to create a product uses cannabinoids, and we know that CBD has a very good anti-inflammatory effect. Some research showed that CBD is twice as much effective than some steroids for pain, and it can have 10 times more anti-inflammatory effect than salicylic acid or aspirin. And then THC has an analgesic effect. So I wanted to use a combination of the anti-inflammatory effects from CBD and the analgesic effect from THC and use it in topical forms for people that really don't want to take cannabis orally, but improve the absorption of these cannabinoids on your skin. Because a lot of companies just want to mix CBD, THC, coconut oil, and terpenes. And yeah, that might absorb a little bit on your skin, but it's not that effective. You have to use permeability enhancers, or you have to use other technology to create to be able to make the skin permeable enough to absorb the cannabinoids and really have an effect on the muscle and have an anti-inflammatory effect and analgesic effect. And what a lot of companies do is they just put terpenes, oil, CBD, THC, and the compound or this topical formulation won't be absorbed all the way to the muscle. It might get into the epidermis, maybe into the dermis, but it won't really go deep into the muscle. And we know that the skin has four different layers. It's first the epidermis, then the dermis, then the subcutaneous area, which you have fat and blood supply, veins and arteries, and then you have the muscle. And you have to cross all these barriers to get into the muscle. And these available formulations currently only can get into the dermis, and they don't really go to the muscle. So I already have some formulations created. We haven't launched the brand for pain, but we want to improve the permeability of your skin. This is not related to edibles, but it's very informative as well to know that a lot of these formulations in the market are not very effective. And I hate when people just waste their money in expensive rubbing balms that the only thing they do is to smell nice, but they don't really rub pain.
They haven't put the science into it, get it to an effective level.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Perfect. So what else can we talk about here in the last couple of minutes? Did I miss anything? Where can people find you online? Do you have anything you need to plug? You have a website or anything?
So I do have two companies. I do have CNC Labs, which focuses on cannabis products, and our website is just cnclabs.com. And I have another company called KidChem, and that's the one I started before CNC Labs. I started in 2016, and in this company is kind of a combination of kitchen and chemistry. I create products for the supplement industry and the food industry, including cannabis industry, but I use the same methods that I use in my cannabis products. I create it. Well, it depends on the type of person and the type of service they want, but I create supplements and I create foods and I create cannabis products for other companies. And I have been doing this since 2016. That's how I actually got into the cannabis industry. I started developing products for many companies, and then a lot of cannabis startups contact me to create products for them. Then I got hired for a big cannabis company to create products. And then is when I started I started Cynthia Labs to create my cannabis products. But I have been always consulting on the side, because I love creating products, then even just confectionaries, food products, but I love creating products that can improve your health by using natural molecules or natural compounds, combinations of minerals, amino acids, proteins, natural plant extracts into a food matrix to improve health.
And from reading your bio, I get the impression you want to make sure that these people do it the correct way.
Yeah.
SOPs and the whole nine yards. So there is no question about effectiveness or reliability or process issues.
Yeah. No.
Beautiful. Yeah. Absolutely fantastic. Well, thanks again for joining us on Research Chat. And again, thanks for all the work you did on this, and so happy to have you on here.
No, thank you. Thank you so much.